With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I am Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Antoine Walker is with us on a glorious, glorious Wednesday morning, February 26, 2020.
It absolutely is a great day. And Antoine, for all the folks out there that say I have some anti-Celtic bias, one of my favorite people in the world, Antoine Walker, is here this morning. How are you?
Thank you.
There's something else about this morning.
What is it?
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to my good friend Danny back in Kansas City.
Antoine, set him straight.
Happy birthday, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
You want me to sing happy birthday to you?
Do you?
No, it's copyright
issue. We only have 3 hours.
Copyright issue. You're not allowed to sing that.
Oh, okay.
Television show's gotten in trouble for that.
But just know, America, he would have sung happy birthday to me, and it would have been beautiful. We have a great, great show for you this morning. Greg Jennings is going to stop by a little later. He's going to talk some Tom Brady and the Chargers and why that could actually be a happening thing. But with Antoine here, we got to start our morning with the game of the night. Here we go. Pelicans, Lakers, the kid versus the king. And both lived up to and way past their billing last night. Zion was incredible. Again, 29 points and 6 rebounds. But at the end of the day, LeBron was all that and then some. Season high, 40 points for LeBron James. First Laker to put up 40 in year 17 since Kobe did it. Lakers get the win over the Pelicans, 118-109. Nick, I got to ask you, how impressive was LeBron's performance last night? 40 points.
It was another playoff-level performance from LeBron like we saw right before the break with that game against Denver, the game that had seeding implications, the game that we said where we talked about LeBron getting dressed a bit earlier than usual like he does in a playoff, in an actual playoff game. And listen, I'll remind the audience again, because nobody can remember anything that didn't happen in the last 6 weeks, and LeBron didn't make the playoffs last year. In the playoffs, if LeBron's shot's falling the way it was last night, he's going to score around 40, as he did last night. If his shot's not falling, he's going to score around 30, which bodes well for the Lakers, because yesterday, Jenna, was the 18th time this season LeBron has scored at least 30. The Lakers in those games are 18-0. They have not lost a single high-volume scoring game this season when LeBron's had a high-volume scoring game. But it really felt to me, Antoine, like the game was put away in the third quarter. Zion and LeBron matched each other almost point for point in the first half. In the early parts of the third quarter, when LeBron hit those consecutive three-pointers and gave the Lakers a comfortable margin, even though the Pelicans came back when LeBron went to the bench and briefly even took the lead, it felt like the Lakers were in full control from that moment forward. And if not for the just atrocious Rondo and Kuzma minutes once again, this is a 25-point blowout, but the Lakers end up winning comfortably in a game with LeBron, offensively maybe his best game of the year.
I was impressed last night with LeBron, and Nick, I talked about this all the time. It's certain games that LeBron has to play like this. I thought against the Clippers, when he plays the Clippers, you got to see this type of LeBron, where he's very aggressive, shoots 11 threes, he's very dominant on the offensive end, getting out on the break, playing with a lot of energy. And he did that last night. He was great in transition. Some of his dunks last night were incredible, so that lets you know when he's playing at that next level. I also like the fact that when he shot 11 threes, I thought anytime that he's aggressive, they're at their best. Anthony Davis was off last night, was only 6-for-21 from the field. But LeBron James, whenever he wants to put his imprint on the game, he can. I think last night he showed that. He knew Zion was coming in the building. He knew it was a lot of hype around the game. He wasn't going against Zion, but he knew it was one of those hype games. And he just, every now and then, LeBron wants to show the world, I'm still the best player in the world right now. And last night was one of those cases where he showed that. And just an unbelievable effort. I hope, and you know, we may talk about this later in the show, I hope this is a first round matchup. That's what it looked like last night to me. It could be a great first round matchup with each other. But impressive performance. Anytime LeBron plays like this, I get excited, because I know if he does this against the Clippers, they got a chance to win a world title. He has to be aggressive like this and play at a level where he goes back to the old LeBron. We've seen a lot of point guard LeBron this year.
But attacking, getting to the rim, I can't. Dusty, you can look this up. He couldn't have had a game this season with more dunks than last night. And they were ferocious dunks. The one from the Caruso between the legs pass, where that's as high as LeBron's gotten up in a couple years. He had, I don't want to say something to prove, but he understood the gravity of the game last night.
So that's what I was going to ask you guys. What do you think is fueling LeBron right now? I mean, is it all the Kobe stuff? Is it the fact that the Lakers are on this incredible run right now? Is it the fact that he loves where his team is? We talk every year about how LeBron goes through a period where there's a little bit of a lull, and he knows what he's got to kind of build up for in the playoffs. But for whatever reason, we didn't see that much of it this year. He's playing like he's got something to prove. LeBron doesn't have to prove anything to anyone. What do you think is fueling this guy? National stage, all the spotlight, and he comes out and does what he did.
I think, obviously, it goes back to last year. I think, obviously, he was disappointed in the season when he was able to add AD. I think he came in very focused. He's taken a very professional approach to the season. That you could tell by the amount of games he's played. You could tell the seriousness, the way he's approached every game to make sure his team gets the one seed. Nick, you talked about it before All-Star break, making sure they finish right. And him going to the press conference, talked about how he wanted to finish the game right. And I just think right now he's very comfortable. He's healthy as he's been. Obviously, we see he can turn it on and be as athletic as he wants to be when he needs to be. So I think right now LeBron is just focused. He's got championship on his mind. And also, too, obviously Kobe has probably gave him even an extra push to want to do this for him as well.
Well, and that the Kobe Bryant tragic element of this is, to me, the aligning story now with this Lakers season. And it is impossible to imagine another player in the NBA being in the position LeBron is in, being the face of the Lakers, being the guy that has to give the speech right after Kobe's death and somehow does that pitch perfect, seemingly unscripted. And then each time there has been some part of the Kobe Bryant tragedy aligned with basketball, he has answered the bell. The day before the memorial, they're playing the hated rival Boston Celtics. You have all the luminaries in the building. He hits the game-winning jump shot. The day after the memorial, they're on national television, back at home, with a Staples Center crowd just full of emotion and excitement because of Zion, and he drops a season-high 40 points. This is a guy who was, when Zion was... LeBron was already in the league when Zion was 3 years old. When Zion was, do I have that right? Yeah, I have that right. When LeBron came into the league, Zion was three. So for the entirety of this star who we're about to talk about, Jenna's life, LeBron has been doing this, and he's now doing it with the additional pressure of all of the city of Los Angeles kind of having what happened with Kobe sitting on them in a way unlike any other city's dealing with.
All right, so the other big story is obviously we said the kid versus the king. Let's talk about the kid. That was Zion. What a night for him. Here's what LeBron had to say about the rookie after the game.
The kid's special. I mean, we all know that. And every game is going to be another opportunity for him to get better and a learning experience for him. But in today's game, where it's a track race, it's a fast pace, it's high tempo, it fits his game perfectly. And the way that they play, it fits his game perfectly because they get the ball out. First 8 seconds, they're trying to score. But the kid is special, man. And, they got a good one in him.
They certainly do. What did you make of Zion's first game against LeBron, Antoine?
I took a lot out of last night. I took a lot of positives, but also took a couple negatives out of it. I thought he was great around the basket at times. We saw length bother him last night. He got his shot blocked probably four or five times with Anthony Davis and JaVale McGee. So he struggles against height. We see that. But his tenacity to continue to keep playing, play through plays, I think, you don't see that sometimes from a 19-year-old. If things ain't going well for him, he continues to play through it no matter what's going on the court. And I thought last night, this is the reason why he should came back. People was like, oh, well, why Zion come back? Why he should never came back? This is why you come back, to see where you're at. And to play the game that he played against the best team in the league right now, well, the second best team, yeah, record-wise.
Best team in the West.
In the West right now, a championship contender, speaks volumes. It helps build, obviously, confidence in him to where he can be at Playing against Anthony Davis, a JaVale McGee, two longer guys. So now he knows offensively what things he needs to work on to get better. Now he knows he has to really work on his jump shot, be able to make a couple of those throughout a game. Don't put so much pressure on himself. I thought the most impressive part to his game last night was getting to the free throw line 19 times.
Listen, because he was – it's unbelievable. It's his 13th game. He goes 29-6 on the road against the best team in the West. And we're like, it wasn't a great game for him because he was 8 of 18 from the field.
Right.
But he buttressed that with 13 of 19 from the free throw line, getting 19 free throw attempts, getting out in transition, keeping whenever it looked like the Lakers might pull away, there was a Zion-led run or a Zion burst of energy. And what he's doing, I don't know if we have time to show it. I hope we do. Because he's on a minutes restriction. So his overall, this is per 36 minutes, which is not a perfect stat, but it shows you how effective you're being on a permanent basis. He's now above Wilt. As far as points per 36 minutes in his rookie season. Joel Embiid obviously did it in very limited minutes. Wilt did it in extended minutes, playing way over 36 minutes. And he's doing it learning on the fly 13 games in. You mentioned the struggling against height. His two least efficient games of his young career, the one bad game he's had against Milwaukee, a great defense with a ton of length, and then a game last night, another team with a massive amount of length and a really, really good defense. Those are the minor tweaks of his game, adding a little perimeter game, as he will this offseason. Mm-hmm. But 29-6-3, and it was like a B-level game from Zion Williamson, speaks to how spectacular he is.
And obviously, we're so used to him shooting 65% from the field. So when he goes 8 for 18, I would love to go 8 for 18. that was a good game for me, if you know what I'm saying. So I understand what people are saying, that it was a marginal game because he's so efficient around the basket, and he does such a good job, especially all season long. But last night was, I give him an A-. I just thought it was a great game. To be able to continue to get to the free throw line when things sometimes are not going your way, he continued to play through the game. The moment, only 13 games in, rising to the occasion and playing on the big stage against LeBron.
And he gets them again this weekend. This weekend they get to go part two of this, and maybe we'll get part 3, 4, 5, 6
in the first playoffs, round.
And more than other rookies I've seen in recent years, you can always tell Zion loves to play basketball. That's why he bounces back if he misses a shot or loves to. You could just tell he loves to play the
and
game.
And it was awesome defensively yesterday. Have you ever had muscle pain? I'm talking stop you in your tracks, will never work out again, what am I going to do kind of pain. This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Their handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, our listeners get a free charging stand with a purchase, a $79 value. That's theragun.com/cadence, theragun.com/cadence.
Drake's Toronto Raptors hosting the Bucks, perhaps a conference finals preview, and it was going to take more than champagne poppies, courtside trash talk to slow down the Greek freak. Giannis with 19 points, 19 rebounds, and 8 assists as the Bucks become the first team to 50 wins. Nick, can anything stop the Bucks from getting out of the East at this point?
The only thing that can stop them, the only people that can stop them are people in their own building. Nobody else in the Eastern Conference is going, if somehow, some way, the Bucks don't make the NBA Finals, it's going to be self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. Because yesterday, I'm watching this game, a great night in the NBA last night. You get Toronto and Milwaukee in your matinee, and then you get the game we just talked about, LeBron Zion in the late game. And yesterday, midway through the second quarter, the Raptors are leading the crowd. They're up double digits. The crowd's fully engaged. And I'm watching it thinking, this is the Raptors saying, we're the champs. We beat you guys last year with or without Kawhi. The title still goes through us. And I had food delivered to my house right when that happened. And I went and got the door, told my wife and daughter's food was there. I got some plates, went back up to my office, and it was tied. I was gone for 4 minutes, and the game was tied. Oh, a nice little pasta, a little shrimp.
You went Italian.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And from that moment forward, the Bucks were in total control of the game. And that's what they have the ability to do. So to me, the only concern for the Bucks, Antoine, is there is the Mike Budenholzer with great teams in the playoffs. He coached a 60-win team in Atlanta. That team season ended with 4 straight losses. Coached a 60-win team in Milwaukee last year. That team season ended with 4 straight losses. You might coach a 70-win team in Milwaukee this year. Will you make necessary adjustments if you have to? And the other question for me, Antoine, is Eric Bledsoe, who is having his best season as a Buck, who's playing really, really well as a third option for them. He was borderline unplayable at times in the postseason last year. They had the Malcolm Brogdon option. Malcolm Brogdon now plays for the Pacers. But it's going to have to be something like this, because I don't see Toronto or Miami or Philly or Boston, any of those teams, being able to throw a real scare into Milwaukee.
The only thing that bothers me about Milwaukee, they're very capable of doing it. Can they go on the road and win? And they would have to go in Toronto and probably win a couple games there, and probably in the Eastern Conference Finals. If they can go in there and do that, they have no problem getting out. They are the best team. They are going to get to the finals. I think the additions that they added puts them over the top finally. I thought last night, if Marvin Williams coming in, making a couple threes to get him, a guy who's never played any meaningful games, now he's energized to play meaningful games. I think Wesley Matthews on his team having some real toughness. And I think George Hill and Bootsner is not scared to play him. I think he'll sit Bledsoe. I think he'll play a George Hill late.
And if Bledsoe's struggling in the playoffs again?
He'll play him. And Chris Middleton, to me, has got better. We don't talk about him enough. He's a 50-40-90 guy. He's playing unbelievable basketball. You look at even the game before this, when Giannis didn't play, I mean, Chris Middleton was unbelievable. His steadiness has been great. I think Robin Lopez added him to the team, too. Their additions gets them over the top. They kept the core together, and they brought in guys that can help their team. And then Giannis is obviously playing at MVP level, probably was going to get back-to-back MVPs. And he wasn't great last night, but 19 rebounds, 8 assists. The way he can continue to affect the game.
And that spectacular defense.
And that defense is unbelievable. They're head and shoulders better than anybody in the Eastern Conference. Barring any injury, I don't see them not getting to the Eastern Conference final. I
mean,
NBA finals.
Hunt, like Jenna, I don't think they're going to face a game 6 until you mentioned they're going to have to win a couple. They have more road wins this year than any other team in the league has home wins. They have been so dominant in all facets. And I'm glad you mentioned Chris Middleton, because I said on the show yesterday that when we look at the dynamic duos in the league, Middleton's the least accomplished of any of the team. Harden, Russ, Kawhi, Paul George, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Giannis, Middleton. Middleton's least accomplished of any of those second best options. But he's having a better season than Paul George is up to this point by far. He is having
elite category.
Say it again.
The elite category now, finally.
Absolutely. I mean, 42% from three. 21 points the night that Giannis fouled out, and he leads them on a 9-2 individual run in overtime the other night to steal that game from Washington. He's playing the best basketball of his life, and that's critical.
And when you look around the East, who's going to stop Giannis at this point? Like, who's playing well enough to jump out in the East and say, all right, I'm the one that's going to contain?
The answer would have been Toronto.
It would have been Toronto. All right, well, the Bucks beat Toronto last night. They extend their lead over the Raptors to 8 games now. But before we go to break, we want to get back to everyone's favorite rapper.
Speak for yourself.
Drake, he showed up donning championship belts trying to troll the Bucks. Did it work?
Jay-Z's my favorite rapper, too. don't put me in that category.
Not even, no one's category. Not even a little, said Giannis.
What was your reaction to Drake bringing out the championship belts tonight?
I didn't notice that. I just found out about it. I don't know who told me. Probably Dante. Somebody told me. I you know, when I'm in the game, I'm just locked in and try to win the game. I really don't look outside pants or, you know, what they do and all that.
I asked Drake if he was bringing the belts to troll you, and he said obviously he was.
That's good. He cares about me. I really don't. So I'm just here to win games and help my teammate, you know, help my team win. That's all.
That's the right answer.
Oh, it's the perfect answer.
That's the right answer.
And Drake's about to be in a rough spot now, because there's a lot of NBA guys that love Drake. That generation is on its way out. Drake's going to be an NBA fan for a long time. Drake's an old man to Zion. Giannis don't give a damn about Drake. I don't know. Go ahead.
You got to put him on. I like this. He's the new Spike Lee. Let's just give him that. He's trying to be like the new Spike Lee.
Except for this. Spike Lee, if I say Spike Lee sports, there is one team you associate him with.
Knicks.
Right? The Knicks.
Man, against one other team. The Pacers,
right,
basically.
Spike's a diehard Knicks fan through and through. Man, Drake, was it Kentucky Wildcats?
Nothing
is it LeBron with the Heat? Oh, I understand. Is it LeBron with the Heat? Is it the Raptors who he's the team ambassador for? Giannis, that was pitch perfect. Drake had to go home with that L. Everything about last night in the NBA was great.
Like this on the season. I do like the fact that they do that wrestling thing. I think every team. Yeah, I do. I think every team should have a little gimmick. Even back when LeBron and them.
With the pictures,
the handshakes.
Yep.
I just think all good teams, it's fun. It brings the team together. I actually like that.
And it speaks to when you're super duper star. That's what
he's the
main guy and he's a young guy and he's having fun. That's why I said that yesterday about the pictures with the Cavs, because similar situation. You got a mid-20s MVP about to win another MVP, and it keeps the team young.
And you got to think about it. This is what makes guys want to come play with you. You know, think about it. Now, we have a couple of guys that can go fit in and play with the Clippers, the Lakers, the Marvin Williams of the world, Kyle Korver. These guys are now choosing to go play with Giannis. So,
right.
And choosing to go
play in Milwaukee.
I know, it's a small town in Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
Joe Burrow, the Heisman winner, a national champion, has been standoffish recently when asked about potentially playing for the Bengals, who own that top pick, and that has led many to speculate that he could pull an Eli Manning and maybe snub Cincy. Yesterday, Burrow put all that speculation to rest.
I'm not going to not play. I'm a ball player. Whoever picks me, I'm going to go show up. I'll play whoever for whoever drafts me. You know, I'm just not going to be presumptuous about, you know, what they want to do. It's the draft. You guys have been covering it for a long time. You never know what's going to happen. You know, the only thing that I've said is I just didn't want to be presumptuous about the pick. And so that's why I've been noncommittal, because I don't know what's going to happen. You know, they might not pick me. They might fall in love with someone else. So, you guys kind of took that narrative and ran with it. But there's never been anything like that from my end.
I feel like we all know he's going number one, and I feel like we all know it's going to go to Cincy, but he doesn't want to be presumptuous. Greg, what did you make of Joe Burrow's comments?
I have no problem with it. I actually like the fact that he came out and said, I'm a ball player. I'll play for any team that drafts me. Look, when you're in his position and you are assumed to be the number one overall pick, you're not a Manning. You don't have your father, Archie Manning, who's played in the NFL. You don't have your brother, who's currently in the NFL, dominating. Like, you're trying to make a name for yourself. You go where you're picked, you're drafted, and then you don't add any additional pressure by saying, you know what, I'm not playing here. If Joe Burrow were to say he's not playing for the Bengals, Joe Burrow is then adding
so much more
pressure on himself to go out and be one of the best quarterbacks that this game has seen, period. When you make a stance like that, I don't think that's what he wants. Does he want to be one of the greatest? Yes. But just go out there and play and be who you've always been. A difference maker.
And Greg, for maybe slightly different reasons, I totally agree with you in this regard. I think Joey has handled this exactly right. And he wouldn't be my pick at number one, Tua would be, but he's going to be the pick at number one. And he clearly and understandably would love it if someone would trade with Cincinnati for that pick. You know why? Because if we are power ranking franchises as far as how well they're run, how well they're funded, how well their facilities are, their history of winning, all these things, Cincinnati is either at the very bottom or right near it. So, of course, he has put just enough out there into the ether that maybe if Cincinnati does have second thoughts, or maybe if Cincinnati does, someone in that building say, you know what, I think Tua maybe is better. And I think if we trade from 1 to 3, we can get the better quarterback and extra picks. He is incentivizing them to do so, which is aligned with his interests. But go ahead, Jenna.
Is that okay? Is it okay to put just enough out there that maybe if Cincy wants to change their mind, they don't have to worry whether he'll be upset about it because they already know he might not want to go there?
Why would it not be okay?
Because wouldn't it be great if he was like, pulling a Tua? I'll play anywhere for anyone with as much gusto as I possibly can. I can't wait. Not putting just enough out
well,
there
I don't know.
So that if
I prefer to work at better places than worse places. And if you have, he's like, why would he not prefer to go to a better run franchise?
Yeah, well, it's not his choice.
If it were anyone's choice, they would prefer what you're saying, Nick, like to be in a
right,
better
but it's
situation.
Not.
It's not his choice. And with Tua, he understands like his level, his talent level and his belief in what he provides. He truly believes I'll go anywhere
Tua has a giant asterisk attached to him.
Yes.
I don't know what Tua's mentality would be if he didn't have this massive injury that totally changed, I think, how he looks at football, how he looks at life, how he looks at his football mortality, all these things. But how on earth can it be criticized what he's doing? I don't understand it. He has said, I will go play for you, but I believe, now he's saying that's not what he was doing. He was saying, when I said I have leverage, I was talking about the combine, whatever it is. He has put just enough out there to where if the Bengals were having second thoughts, then everybody wins. The Bengals get to, nobody's forcing their hand. Nobody is saying you can't draft him. He said there in black and white, I'll play for whoever takes me. But I think he's put enough out into the ethos that if the Bengals were having second thoughts, now they'll have third thoughts, and maybe he gets to go to a better team. Now, maybe that comes back and bites him. Maybe Zach Taylor turns into the next brilliant coach, or maybe Zach Taylor turns into the next fired Cincinnati Bengals coach, and Joe Burrow by year two is on head coach too. So, you can't make the argument to me. We had Carson Palmer, who played for this team, say, man, don't go there. We don't do it.
Now, that's tough. When you have a quarterback.
Quarterback who threatened to retire. Carson Palmer
yes.
under contract. He said, I would rather stop playing football than continue playing for you. And so, that's the history of Andy Dalton was, I think, one touchdown away from the team's all-time touchdown record. And they benched him out of nowhere the day after the trade deadline. Like, nope, we're not going to trade you. You can't demand a trade. And by the way, we're going to snatch the ability for you to get a record you've earned. Now he ended up getting it because they put him back into the starting lineup. The Bengals have earned their designation of a poorly run franchise. You have to, that bill at times comes due, and Burrow's not even making them pay it. He's saying, I will go play for you, but I think he has intentionally put enough out there to where maybe Miami wants to pay a king's ransom, and maybe if Cincy thinks we can still get a quarterback we like, and then Burrow would be in, a better position. I think he's playing it exactly right to me.
All right, let's talk about another quarterback who's already in the league. That is Cam Newton. His future with Carolina has been up in the air the last couple of months, with the team still seemingly undecided on their quarterback decision. Yesterday, Cam put up a short video on Instagram saying, quote, all I want is a little commitment. Something he hasn't really gotten from the Panthers in the last year, but the Panthers took notice this time. New head coach Matt Rhule saying, quote, I absolutely want Cam here. That amid a report that Carolina will keep Cam as their starter. All right, Greg, there's a lot going on here. I still feel like we're going back and forth on whether this team really wants to put all their eggs in the Cam Newton basket. What's your reaction to all this?
Number one, I respect Cam a lot for putting that out there and saying all I want is a little commitment. He deserved a little commitment.
And he's talking to the team.
And he's talking to the team. And when you've done what he's done for that franchise, you deserve a little commitment. I'm not saying you deserve for them to say, yes, you're going to be here, or no, you're not. But you deserve for new regime to come out and say, we at least want you here. And so for them to come out and say that, it now gives him this idea and belief that, okay, now I can start moving forward and feeling comfortable that the offseason is approaching. You do kind of want me here. I just have to continue to be on the path of creating and stacking success and fit into what you're trying to do. Cam Newton is a great talent. He has been in one of the worst positions as a player, specifically at the quarterback position, who has had a revolving door around him as offensive coordinator, as players around him, skill guys. He's never had.
They haven't been able to find the wide receivers.
His entire career, he's only had Greg Olsen.
Right. Steve Smith early on and then Greg
that's
Olsen.
It. Yep. And absolutely. Steve Smith when he first got there. But after that, it's been a revolving door. And so he deserves the opportunity to build with this team and to see if he fits in what they're trying to do in the future.
And they don't have a better option. They've never had a better option. This is the smartest thing the Panthers have done in quite some time if they do go through with it. And this idea, again, I feel like sometimes I live in a crazy world where nobody can remember anything that didn't happen in the last 18 months. Cam Newton, prior to the TJ Watt hit, had missed 3 games in his career. His whole career. Going into this season, he'd only missed 5. Then he missed basically the entirety of this season. This year was a lost season. Leading into the TJ Watt hit, with the new throwing motion and the new offense, Cam Newton had a 101 rating, 19 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, to go along with 45 rushing yards per game and 230 passing yards per game, and 67% completions, and his team was 6-2. That wasn't the MVP season. That was 2018. That was Patrick Mahomes' MVP year, is the year that Cam was 6-2. And so, of course, this is their better option. What's up?
So why didn't the Carolina Panthers say, you're our guy. Let's sign you up for a couple more years. Here's a new contract. Like, why aren't they, if they know that, 101 passer rating, those 8 games were great games, why not say, you're our guy?
I feel like that's what they were just doing.
But for the last year, they haven't been. They've been sort of floating it out there that they're not sure what they're going to do.
Well, he's had a broken foot. And now they I'm not advocating you give him a contract extension. I'm advocating
just let him play the year.
You got Cam Newton
last year of his contract
for 1 year, $19 million, to see if he can get back to that level. If he does, he's the best non-rookie quarterback bargain in the NFL. This is, and by the way, Matt Rhule, what he has done at every stop offensively at the collegiate level and also with an NFL background, I'm excited to see Cam in that. And Greg, just quickly, I'm curious your thoughts on this. All of a sudden, the NFC South feels like one of the more wide-open divisions in football. Tampa don't know who their quarterback is. Atlanta inexplicably brought Dan Quinn back. Let's run that thing back, see what happens. And New Orleans doesn't have a quarterback under contract yet, even though they seemingly have 3 competent ones or 2 competent ones and Taysom, whatever Taysom's going to be. So to me, that division's super winnable if you get the Cam Newton that you had before T.J. Watt wrecked his shoulder and before he got his foot broken.
Yeah, when you look at a team like this and you get a new head coach, ownership has changed. The one thing that you want to have is a leader in that locker room, a guy who's been there, who's won, who's literally trying to do the things that you want at the quarterback position. And as you mentioned, Cam is their best option. There is no one, like, you can talk about Teddy Bridgewater, you can talk about Tom Brady, you can talk about all these guys that are free agents right now. I would not, if I'm the Carolina Panthers and I have Cam, I'm not taking one of those guys.
And all those guys will cost more.
Yes.
Than $19 million next season that Cam Newton, who's already in your building and wants to be there.
No, it certainly seems Cam Newton is the best option for the Panthers at this point. Sixers got yet more bad news regarding Ben Simmons yesterday. He reportedly has a nerve impingement in his lower back. As a result, he's expected to now be sidelined for an extended period of time. He will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. There is little expectation, though, that he'll be close to return at that point. Nick, is the Sixers season basically in jeopardy, or is now this Embiid's time to go out there and own it and shine?
Yes and yes. Yes, their season's in jeopardy. Their season's been in jeopardy basically evidently since the season started, when they did not take a leap forward and step. Instead, they took a step or a step and a half backwards. But yes, also, this is Joel Embiid's opportunity to show everyone we can be better without Ben Simmons and be better with a point guard or with a collection of players in return for Ben Simmons that better fit my very unique skill set in the modern NBA. That Simmons and Embiid have been an awkward fit from the beginning because of Simmons' refusal to shoot and because Embiid, even though he will take some three-pointers, is maybe our last remaining old-school NBA center. Back to the basket, give me the ball, I'm going to punish you on the post. And so the fit has just been awkward. And we've seen that Both guys have, at times, played their best basketball in games the other guy has missed. The playoffs last year, maybe Ben Simmons' best game of his career was a game Joel Embiid was out. Joel Embiid, the highest scoring game of his career, literally, was the other night when Ben Simmons was out. And so I think Antoine, with or without Simmons, this is not a championship-level team. They have not played to that level anywhere close to it through 55 games, while the Bucks clearly have. But it is an opportunity for Joel Embiid to give the Sixers maybe a sneak preview of what the team would look like if this offseason they were to see what Ben Simmons could fetch on the open market.
I believe that, obviously, they're not a team that can win with either one of those guys together or without them. They're not going to be able to win in the Eastern Conference. I think they're the fourth best team in the East. I think Milwaukee's better than them, the Celtics and Toronto. I think all three of those teams are better than them, even when Philly's whole. But right now, this is going to be an opportunity. Elton Brand is going to get a legitimate shot to really take a really good sample size of what they'll look like if Ben Simmons didn't play. And I would look at it, I would take that approach, because that's been the conversation that maybe these guys cannot coexist together. So I would take a really good look at that and see if Embiid could be the guy that you can build around and see if you can win with him. That 14 games over 500, your second leading scorer is still out there in Tobias Harris, a guy you paid big money to in free agency. You still have him. Obviously, Josh Richardson on the team. You made a great trade, I thought, in adding scoring to the team with Alex Burke. And then Glenn Robinson III.
Yep.
So you added two other guys that can score the basketball. So they're not out of it. They're going to make the playoffs. They should be able to win a first-round series. But Ben Simmons' back injury, I think you got to take that very serious. I think it's something that you cannot rush back. This is a guy, a franchise-type player, so you don't want to rush him back just for this season. So you got to make sure that he's healthy. But I do not believe, even with both of those guys, they're the fourth best team in the East, and you have to be very cautious of bringing Simmons back.
And at times it's unfair. We've said on this show before, the single best in life in the NBA is the non-superstar on the max contract, because you get all the money with none of the pressure and none of the criticism. We talk so much about Simmons and Embiid. Tobias Harris has not played nearly up to the standards they paid him to play at, and Al Horford, that move right now is one they would like back. The money they gave Horford and the fit. But those guys are, I don't want to say untradeable, but those guys are going to be on the team next season. So you do want to see what those two guys can look like with Embiid there, without Simmons. But Jenna, the numbers are jarring as far as when the Sixers are at their best, with Embiid, without Simmons. We can show them, I think. With Embiid, without Simmons. With Simmons, without Embiid. With both of them, with neither. So that's their margin. That's their net rating. With just Embiid, that is a great team as far as net rating. With just Simmons, that's a good team. With both of them, that's an average team. And obviously with neither of them, it's a terrible team. You don't want to see the numbers like that, that somehow they are the worse with both of them than with just one of the two. It does speak to potentially a bigger problem.
Also, to add to that, I just think when your two superstars, and both of those guys were all-stars last year,
yep,
they didn't get better. You gotta sometimes you gotta look yourself in the mirror. Ben Simmons, you yet to shoot a jump shot. That's embarrassing. You knew you had to add a jump shot. You spent all summer, you got everybody filming you, shooting all these jump shots. You only want to shoot one in the game.
So let me ask you this then. There have been so many stops along the way where Ben Simmons could have been like, oh, okay, reality check. Or now it's an off season. It's time for me to get better. I've gotten myself so far. If Joel Embiid goes out and carries this team, and I know that their record coming up or their
schedule
coming up is going to be a little bit easy, but say they go out and Joel Embiid does great without Ben Simmons, could that be a wake-up call? Could that be a little bit of a gut check? Like, listen, I gotta step my game up if this is not where my future is.
Well, I'm looking at, this has been the talk. It's the conversation. Elton Brand, the Sixers may have no, they may not think they're going to trade neither one of them. But I think if you want to trade one of them, you get a good look at it. I think it's just a fact you get an opportunity to look at it, take a real good sample size and see what you really like if you want to take one or the other. I would keep both of them. I would just hold both of them accountable. I think you have to have real talks with them and say, if you want to get over to this next level, we got to continue to improve. That's everything. When B continually working on his body, getting better, knowing where he's good and where he could be effective at in his game. Ben Simmons has to develop some type of jump shot, or at least attempt some type of jump shot for him to continue to get better so he can expand his game. You got to put that pressure on them. And these guys have been making all-star teams. These guys are supposed to be getting you over the hump and getting you back to the finals, and they're not making the right adjustments in their game. So it'd be interesting to see what Philly does.
But what's so odd is their first year together, they were a dynamic on-court pair. The net rating that I just showed when they're together is 0.9, less, basically call it 1 point, was 15.5, plus 15.5 their first year together. The year they ended the regular season on that crazy winning streak seemed like a really dangerous team going into the postseason until it was the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Last year together, they were not as good as plus 15.5, but plus 8 when they're on the court together. This year to be plus 1 when it's your two best players, it makes no sense. Jenna, you say the reality check. The problem is, what's reality? If you're Ben Simmons, you're like, well, my first year in the league, I'm the best rookie. My second year in the league, I make an all-star team. Then I get a max contract. My third year in the league, I'm an all-star again, and I'm making max money. Seems like what I'm doing is working here.
Yeah.
So it depends on what your ultimate goal is and what you measure success by. I think Ben Simmons would tell you, man, I ain't failed never.
Right.
So what are you talking about?
Right. Moving on to Tom Brady's future now. For weeks, Brady has been linked to the LA Chargers. Yesterday, Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn was asked if he wants a mobile quarterback now that Phillip Rivers is gone. Listen to what he had to say.
I prefer a winning quarterback. You don't have to be mobile. I believe that guy in New England won a lot. He's not very mobile.
All right, what do you think, Nick? I know you've been on this corner for a long time, earlier than probably almost anyone. You like the fit, Brady, to the Chargers? Has he wavered at all?
No, this is... And by the way, Tyrod Taylor's a fine option. I think Tyrod Taylor was a good-ish quarterback in Buffalo, and we'll see how he's developed if they don't get Tom, if they don't do something else. But this has always made the most sense. Tom Brady's from California. Granted, Northern California, not Southern California, but he's still from the West Coast. The Chargers have elite talent on this football team. They've got, I think, a guy who is already one of the 10 best defensive players in football, and I'm not talking about Joey Bosa, I'm talking about Derwin James. And then another guy who might be one of the 10 best defensive players in football in Joey Bosa, go along with Melvin Ingram. That's on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, you have freak athlete Mike Williams. You have Keenan Allen, who's one of the more underrated guys at his position in the league. As far as, we don't know who they're bringing back, but Hunter Henry, Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler, Russell Okung comes back healthy, you've got a left tackle. What they needed last year was a quarterback who was not repeatedly throwing the ball to the other team. And for all my criticisms of Tom Brady, and despite his season ending on a pick six, he's not a turnover-prone quarterback. He's quite the opposite. He'll throw the ball away. He will throw it in the dirt. He's not going to turn the ball over. So to me, it's always been the Chargers as the favorite, not Tampa, not Indy, not Tennessee. So to me, it's always made the most sense, Greg, and that's where I see him landing.
It makes sense when you talk about it like that, as far as a place where Tom Brady can go and he can be inserted, and then they have potential to be a Super Bowl contending team. However, you look in that division, and who's in that division?
Let me think. The Raiders? You're talking about them?
The Raiders.
The Raiders, the Broncos.
Your guy.
The Chiefs. Yeah,
the Chiefs.
That's the reigning
Super Bowl champ.
I forgot.
So the road to success is not going to be easy. But just focusing on that situation, again, it goes back to culture. Everyone can say and feel and believe that a place is a right fit. But if the mentality of those guys in that locker room, those guys haven't won. They are hungry. They want to win, but they would have to learn how to win. Maybe Brady can be that X factor and get them over the hump, but maybe it's too late. The style of play that they like to play with throwing the ball down the field, they do run a lot of crossing routes. That bodes well for what Brady can do, mm-hmm. and not having him stand in that pocket and wait for those guys to create separation and get open down the field. That works out. But if you're just depending on Tom Brady to step in and say, oh, this is a Super Bowl bound team.
I don't think Peyton Manning
and Denver Broncos.
I don't think
all
so
over.
Either. But I also think the Chargers have other factors at play, like having anyone in the city of Los Angeles care about them. Like selling tickets to that new stadium that they are the co-tenants of the Rams with. And there's one other element of this that I think is totally fair to bring up. All three of us on this set are married to powerful, successful women. And all three of us could not just say, hey, guess what? We're moving. It is a, right? You couldn't. It would have to be a mutual decision. Greg, I know you couldn't. It would have to be a mutual decision. I sure as hell could not. It has to be a mutual decision, and we have to take into account how the move would affect our spouses. Tom Brady's wife is as successful in her field as he is in his. Tom Brady's wife is as big of a contributor to the family's overall finances as he is to their overall finances. Tom Brady's wife has been publicly saying, and I'm not getting in his business because she's done this on television, that she's wanted Tom to retire for a number of years. If he's going to sell her on, not only am I not retiring, but we're moving, because I don't buy this idea that he's just going to go away from the family for 6 months. That's not the person I saw in Tom versus Time. Doesn't appear. Then he has to be able to sell her on a city that their kids are familiar with, kids might have friends at, they have a home at, that she can do her business at without having to get on a private plane. That ain't Nashville. That ain't Indy. That ain't Tampa. It's maybe Miami, but then you're you can't win. Or it's the Chargers in LA where they've got a home and where she can do her work. I think that's a big factor.
Why do you trust that Tom Brady could be successful in LA? Yes, he might have more weapons, but not nearly the coach that he would have in New England. And he won't be, and he can't be, and he's no longer going to be successful in New England.
I don't think Tom Brady is going to be a championship quarterback anywhere he goes. I don't think Tom Brady believes that, though. And so if you're looking at the team, the Chargers have more talent than New England does, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. And so I don't think, if I were running a team and ticket sales and popularity didn't matter at all, Greg, I would never give Tom Brady $30 million a year. But there are guys running teams that have a different opinion of him than I do, and there are guys running teams that say winning is one of the factors in me keeping my job. But if we sell out our new stadium because I nailed the acquiring Tom Brady, that's probably an easier way for me to keep my job.
I mean, that for me is the number one reason why the Chargers would be all over this, because they're in a market where they have to sell tickets. They're competing with
everyone,
and everything.
And of course, every sport.
Exactly. Right. Not even every sport.
And beach and Hollywood.
Yes, yeah. It's just Hollywood. And so you're competing with all things, and you want people to come and see what your product is. And with Tom Brady under helmet and on that field in your uniform, that kind of lures them to want to gain interest and pique their interest in the coming to watch.
As far as selling tickets, Tom Brady is a bigger draw for the city of Los Angeles than Patrick Mahomes would be. As far as actually moving the needle there. This Charger team was 12-4 2 years ago, and no one cared. No one cared the year they moved from San Diego. And so, and I understand they weren't in the new stadium yet, but if you, he is, that since Peyton retired, he is without question the single biggest draw in the NFL. No matter what his level of play is, he's Tom bleeping Brady. And I think so for all those reasons, that's why, Jenna, for 5 months I've been saying the Chargers, it's the family, it's the team need, it's the skill position, it's the city they're in, it's all of it. To me, it's the only place that makes sense.
The draw is what's going to be the hardest thing for Robert Kraft if they are going to go separate ways to let happen. The fact that he's such a draw to let that walk out of your building. Nick, a little in or out?
Love to.
Here we go. Kyler Murray's head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, said he hopes the 22-year-old quarterback makes a big leap in year two, like Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson both did. Nick, you in or out on Kyler making a year two leap?
Not like those two guys. I'm out. Those two guys both won MVP in year two. I mean, that's a hell of a standard to have. Like, go from a rookie to be the third consecutive second-year player to win league MVP. So, listen, Kyler was better last year than I thought he would be, and I want to give him credit. I was very concerned about his lack of size. That didn't seem to kill him last year the way I thought it would. But, no, I don't think Kyler's ready to make that type of leap, so I'm out.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. I'm in. Not the MVP type of leap, but the level of play that they will provide for their team to be successful. I think a second year with Cliff Kingsbury.
Him too?
And yes, him too. And the guys around him, they understand what he brings and who he is. This is going to be his team moving forward. I love it.
Can he be the second best quarterback in that division? Russell's one. We got Goff. We got Garoppolo. We got Kyler.
Yes.
I think he can.
I think he definitely can.
I think he can do.
It'll be a fun class.
I don't think he can win league MVP. I think he'll be the second best quarterback in the division.
On to the Carolina Panthers now. They're reportedly moving on with Cam Newton as their starter, with new head coach Matt Rhule saying, I absolutely want Cam here. Greg, you in or out on the Panthers making the playoffs? The playoffs with Cam under center.
I'm out because, and I know, Nick, you mentioned this earlier about it being wide open. For whatever reason, I don't know why, I'm still high on the Atlanta Falcons. Like, I know their offense, they have the pieces. Yeah. They have a quarterback that can get it done. Yeah. Defensively, I don't know what has happened. They have so much talent. Mm-hmm. I think that they can bounce back. In New Orleans, we know what they are.
Tampa, we don't know.
We
exactly
don't know what Tampa are. They're a good team. With Bruce Arians at the helm, I don't know what the Carolina Panthers will be.
Last time we saw Carolina with healthy Cam Newton, they were 6-2, and Cam was playing best football of his life since his MVP season. That was all the way back. I mean, if you can barely remember it, in November of 2018. It's not that long ago. I'm in.
You lose Kuechly.
You lose Kuechly. I understand
that. Huge.
And you lose Greg Olsen. But you also didn't have this level of Christian McCaffrey then. Christian McCaffrey was in year two, beginning of year two, hadn't really exploded in the player that he is now. I think Cam, Matt Rhule's offense, I think that division is wide open. I have no idea why the Falcons are. That's one of the craziest things you've said all week.
I mean, they got so much.
That's last year and the year before. They've had a lot of talent for a long time.
So you, to the guy who just said, we can't remember 6 weeks back.
You want me to go 4 years back?
Hey.
You want me to go back to 28-3 against this guy?
All right, on to this guy. On to the Chargers now. When L.A. head coach Anthony Lynn was asked if he wants a mobile quarterback, he said, quote, I believe that guy in New England won a lot. He's not very mobile, which had us thinking. Greg, you in or out on the Chargers winning the AFC West if they go get Brady?
I'm out.
Out.
I'm out. Because, and I hate to say this, Jenna, I'm going to talk to you.
Okay.
I'm going to talk to you because
easier,
I don't really want to look across the table and talk to you.
No, it's okay.
There's a team in that division that has a very talented quarterback and head coach that wears Air Force Ones.
Yeah.
Without the crease helper.
Without the crease
thing.
I just don't think they will be able to have enough.
Oh, to beat them?
Yeah.
Who's that team, Jenna?
That would be your Super Bowl winning Chiefs.
Yeah, the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Now, listen, the word is we might have a new CBA coming out anytime today, maybe. It might be ratified today. If in that new CBA there's a divisional realignment and Kansas City gets moved, then I could be in. But assuming Kansas City is going to be in the AFC West this upcoming season, of course I'm out. Put any team in the AFC West. Put all the teams in the AFC West. Have to be one big division. Ain't none of them winning but the Chiefs. So I'm out.
Love it.
Yeah.
On to the debate of the decade. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel said yesterday, you get to a certain age that grown men probably shouldn't wear jerseys.
Vrabel said this?
Vrabel said that.
Good job, Vrabel.
Nick, I guess I know, but you in or out on adults wearing jerseys?
I am out. The only exception might be hockey sweaters. Hockey games are cold. It doesn't look just like it. There's more of an aesthetic to it, but there's different levels of this being unacceptable. The most unacceptable is an adult wearing an NBA jersey over their business shirt, like the collared shirt. That is an embarrassment, and those people should have their season tickets revoked. Next level is just the adult wearing a regular NBA jersey with nothing underneath it. The next level is the football jersey. Once we get to baseball jerseys, I can maybe at times. Hockey sweaters are okay, but in general, I'm out, Greg Jennings.
I'm in, and I'm personally out, but I'm in on the idea of it. Who would be the example for the youth wearing the jersey? Where would they get this idea of, I should wear that?
There are certain things you should grow out of, Greg, like making a big deal of your birthday.
But
at
what
a certain age.
Nick,
for 1 second.
What I'm saying, Nick, is to take your kids.
Oh!
to take your kids to the game.
Uh-huh.
Like, you want to be in that spirit.
Yeah, and you want your kids, just like as I said before, you want your kids to be very excited and make a big deal of their birthday. And then at some point, they get older.
I get what's happening here. Uh-huh. I can't focus because it is my birthday
That is a weird, like, neck placement.
Nick, can you turn around and make your neck do that?
Yeah, no problem. You just want me to have, what, this?
It looks equally as weird in person, Greg. No problem.
I have a Greg Jennings jersey.
Impressive jerseys, though.
Yeah, I have a Greg Jennings jersey. I wouldn't wear it. I have it framed. Greg signed it for me. It's in my memorabilia hall.
Really?
Yeah,
you decided one was just enough for the show, and anyone else that hosts the show didn't need one?
I asked him for it, Jenna.
I was going to say, Jenna, you didn't ask. Jenna,
I didn't know that was a thing.
You've asked one person. Hold on, America. You've asked one guest we've ever had. We've had Shaquille O'Neal on the show. We've had Hall of Famers. One person you've asked for a jersey. Dude whose last name was Wolf, who played for the Broncos. You're like, can I have one of your jerseys? I wouldn't even have to pay to personalize it, and it's hanging in her office.
I did do that.
Yeah.
I didn't remember his first name.
Derek Wolf.
Yeah. The Broncos.
Yeah, she pretended she cared for 6 hours.
On to the Rockets. Their last two seasons ended at the hands of the then mighty Golden State Warriors, who are mighty no longer. They've got the worst record in the NBA, which isn't lost on the Rockets, with Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta saying, quote, none of us fear the Lakers or the Clippers or Denver like we feared Golden State. It's not like we were scared of them. We could easily win the West this year or get knocked out in the first round. Nick, what do you make of what Fertitta had to say?
It's absolutely right. The exciting part of this season is the lack of an overwhelming favorite. That you've got, for most people, let me remove my opinion out from this for a moment because I think differently of the Clippers than my Clippers opinion is way outside of the mainstream. And I think I'm going to be proven right, but there have been one or two times in my history where I've been wrong, so let's assume this is one of them. The vast majority of people think there is a top three of the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks in some order or another, and then another very healthy, you know, upper middle class of the Rockets, of the Raptors, of the Celtics, of the Sixers if they get their act together, of Denver, and now you've got, that's a more than a quarter of the league that is legitimate championship contenders. The healthy Golden State, it was Golden State and then, I mean, maybe if LeBron and Kyrie both play a perfect series, they can take them six. And then the Rockets, if with Chris Paul and James Harden, if they play as well as they can and win every close game, and they took them seven. But you knew it was Golden State was going to have to probably suffer an injury, maybe suffer a couple, and they still might be able to beat you. That is not at all what this season is. This season, to me, has two major favorites, but then a bunch of other really good teams. The last few years had one overwhelming favorite. So, Antoine, I think Tillman Fertitta is 100% correct.
I agree with him as well. I think you think about when those teams, when you thought about the first team, Steph, Clay, Draymond, used to be like, man, how are we going to beat them? And then you add Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, those guys, you was like, man, they got a real good core. And teams used to be scared to play against them. Then when they added Kevin Durant, it went to a whole nother level. We already put them in a championship. We knew LeBron was going to get it in the finals against them and be a little handicapped against them. But it was a fear that we knew playing against Golden State, if you can keep it close, it was like, oh, okay, that was a good game. Yep. We kept it close against them. So I do agree with him on that opinion about that. But I think now, if you look at Houston and the way they've done their team and now even going to small ball, the way they just said, forget it, nobody's scared of the Lakers or the Clippers. They believe that they can be beat by anybody. And that's why you see Houston make the move they made and say, okay, well, we're going to get rid of Clint Capella. We're going to play small ball. You wouldn't have made that move if you felt like you were scared of the Lakers because the Lakers has size. And you would believe that, hey, we need to have some bigs to battle Anthony Davis, to battle with JaVale McGee and those guys. But now teams don't fit it. They believe that their style maybe can win out.
And quietly, by the way, the Rockets, second longest winning streak in the league, Russ playing exceptional basketball. Russ, the Clint Capella trade, once again, Daryl Morey does something. The vast majority of the media says, the hell's Daryl thinking? And it looks like Daryl's smarter than most people.
Well, he's winning games during the regular season. The Houston problem, and as we continue to talk about the Rockets,
it's the postseason.
Yeah, and can James Harden get over that hump? I mean, he has to get over that hump in the playoffs where he's able to lead his team pass, you know, the Lakers or the Clippers to get to the finals.
I agree with you, but the point I'm making about Daryl and the Clint Capella trade, Clint Capella, by the way, who's still not back with the injury, is Daryl and James are tied together, right? James going to be there forever, and Daryl will be there as long as I think as he wants to be. If Daryl were to have any concerns that I think you have, that a lot of people have, about what if James hits another wall in the postseason, what you have to have is the best version of Russell Westbrook possible. And trading away Capella and making it to where Russ is has centers guarding him and Russ can just go full speed and nobody can match it has unlocked the best version of Russell Westbrook. So even if Harden has a playoff hiccup, maybe that doesn't kill you the way it did in years past because we are now seeing a Russell Westbrook. But like the Rockets right now in the first round would play the Jazz. They've played the Jazz three times since they went super small.
Yeah, Jazz can't beat them.
I mean, no, Gobert becomes unplayable. The one time the Jazz did beat him was on that last second shot, I think, by Bogdanovich at the end. But he's made Gobert, who's the second best player on the Jazz, be unplayable in those games.
And I would say this, the last thing about the Rockets. They did make some moves who I thought were better, and I talked about this. If you're going to play small ball, you got to have the right personnel. Adding Jeff Green and Damari Carroll are two better guys to play in small ball. They both can shoot the three. They're better defensive players. They're also guys. So they're making the right moves to kind of, you know, fine-tune that small ball right now.
And by the way, Ben McLemore, who was a lottery bust, people thought his career was on the fringes, shooting like 43% from three for them this year. To me, after L.A. and Milwaukee, the Rockets have as good of a chance as anybody in basketball, including the Clippers.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.